So here's a story that's going to probably make you quite angry as it did to me. Because they didn't just spy on activists. They didn't just take out leaders. They infiltrated movements, forged letters, and convinced people to destroy their own friends. Then they said, oh, we stopped doing that. Except, no, they didn't. And now, almost no one even remembers the name, COINTELPRO. It sounds like a 70s spy novel, but this wasn't fiction. This was an FBI program to neutralize Americans in their own cities, homes, and minds. Martin Luther King Jr. got a letter telling him to take his own life. Fred Hampton was taken out in his bed after an FBI informant incapacitated him. They even went after John Lennon for singing the wrong song. But that's just the history they admit to. Because the real story? It's much worse. They didn't just try to silence voices. They built a machine to erase them completely. A psychological weapon that never got dismantled. And the more you look at what's happening right now, the more it looks like COINTELPRO just got a software update. If this is what they did to the people we celebrate in documentaries, what did they do to the ones we never heard about? And worse, why are we still pretending this ended? COINTELPRO wasn't just about surveillance. It was an operating system for psychological warfare against the American people. The targets? Civil rights leaders, whistleblowers, activists, musicians, even scientists with the wrong ideas. And the tactics were disinformation, character assassination, false flag setups, sabotage essentially from the inside out. They didn't need to imprison you. They made your friends stop trusting you. They made you paranoid. They made you doubt your own reality. And when the public found out, they just gave it a new name, said it was over, and just renamed the folder. Because the deeper you dig, the more you realize COINTELPRO didn't vanish. It went digital. From social media psyops to algorithm suppression to covert influence operations that make the old tricks look like finger painting. This machine never stopped. And here's the truth they never once said out loud. COINTELPRO isn't history. It's infrastructure. And you're inside it. Hey, if you're still here, it means you're not just here for the surface level stories. You're chasing something deeper, like we are. So please do me a favor, hit subscribe, because if we don't build this community, the algorithm isn't going to help us and no one's going to tell these stories at all. All right, onward. Okay, so here's the official version. COINTELPRO stands for Counterintelligence Program, launched in 1956 by the FBI. Publicly, it was supposed to protect the U.S. from communism, foreign subversion, and radical extremism. But behind closed doors, it was a domestic psychological warfare operation targeting anyone who challenged the status quo. Illegally, I might add. Run directly by J. Edgar Hoover, the FBI's director at the time, COINTELPRO was never about foreign threats. It was about controlling internal dissent by any means necessary. And we're not guessing. We have the receipts. FBI memos explicitly said things like, I quote, prevent the rise of a black messiah. Their goal was to stop any charismatic leader from unifying marginalized communities, especially black Americans. They didn't just monitor groups, they infiltrated them. They spread disinformation. They forged letters. They planted stories. They turned friends against each other. And when all that failed, they pushed further. Here's where most videos stop, where they roll the credits and say, well, it was bad, but it ended in the 70s. But that's just a surface-level history lesson. Because once you understand how this machine worked, you start to see the outlines of something much bigger. This wasn't just a rogue project. It was a playbook, and they never stopped using it. You know how they always say the truth will come out eventually? Yeah, turns out that only works if someone's still alive to tell it. Let's talk about what COINTELPRO actually did to America's civil rights leaders. Not the watered-down version they teach you in schools, if they even teach that. The version you will find buried in declassified memos, suppressed documents, and decades-late court settlements. Let's start with MLK Jr. The FBI didn't just follow him. They wiretapped his phones. They bugged his hotel rooms. They sent him anonymous letters, one of which literally encouraged him to take his own life. That letter, by the way, has been authenticated. The FBI's own files confirm they tried to psychologically destabilize him before he became, quote, too powerful. Fred Hampton, charismatic, 21 years old, organizing poor black and white communities in Chicago under one banner. The FBI placed an informant right next to him. That informant drugged him the night of December 3rd, 1969. Hours later, police raided his apartment. He never woke up. 41 bullets were fired, most of them into the bedroom where Fred was sleeping next to his pregnant fiance. And what about Malcolm X? By the time he died, both the Nation of Islam and federal agencies had informants all around him. They didn't just monitor him, they shaped the conflict that got him killed. They infiltrated both sides of a growing internal split and stoked the flames until the inevitable happened. This wasn't just surveillance, this was coordinated destabilization, a pattern of infiltration, manipulation, and orchestration. Then, letting local law enforcement handle the cleanup. They didn't pull triggers. They didn't need to. They built the conditions and stepped back to watch the outcomes. COINTELPRO didn't end lives with bullets. It ended them with paperwork, whisper campaigns, and 1,000 hidden hands pushing from the shadows. And if they could do this to leaders, what do you think they did to the names history forgot? When most people hear COINTELPRO, they think of the big names, MLK, Malcolm, the Black Panthers. But that's a surface, because once you look beyond the classroom version, a disturbing pattern emerges, one that connects civil rights, environmentalism, women's liberation, cultural icons, and even fringe science. Let's break it down for a second. The American Indian Movement, AIM, wasn't just targeted, they were framed. Documents show federal agents infiltrated AIM and helped escalate conflicts, then used those incidents as justification for brutal crackdowns. At least dozens died during the height of that surveillance and suppression. The 1973 standoff at Wounded Knee, that wasn't a one-off, it was part of a coordinated effort to paint AIM as violent extremists. Then, ever heard of Anna May Aquash? Probably not. She was a powerful voice in the American Indian Movement, and she ended up with 2 gunshot wounds to the head in 1975. FBI documents show she was under active surveillance. The people who executed her? Never fully identified. Her story wasn't erased by accident. It was the blueprint. Then we have the Earth First and early environmental movements. Long before climate change was a thing, eco activists were under full spectrum surveillance. Groups like Earth First were hit with propaganda operations, accused of being violent or anarchist threats to national security. We now know they were used as early testbeds for what would become modern digital surveillance and predictive behavior modeling. Next up, the women's liberation groups. You want to know how to neutralize a growing grassroots movement? You forge letters. You plant rumors. You send infiltrators to create rifts between leaders. And that's exactly what happened. From FBI records, we know feminist groups were pitted against each other with forged correspondence and carefully engineered drama, intended to fracture the movement from within. Now, what about cultural icons? Well, John Lennon was tailed by the FBI for years. Why? Because he sang protest songs and supported anti-war movements. Bob Marley? Multiple assassination attempts. Some claim poisoning. Documents suggest CIA-aligned figures had access to him. Jimi Hendrix? He didn't just overdose. There are real theories backed by witnesses that suggest his death was not accidental. And no, we're not glamorizing any of this. These aren't just tabloid rumors. There are FOIA documents and former agents who have spoken out. We can't leave out my favorite, the UFO researchers. Wait, what? Yes, groups like the NICAP and the APRO were heavily monitored during COINTELPRO. Some members were pressured, some blackmailed. And why? Because they were digging too close to classified aerospace programs or something even bigger. Now, what about alternative science figures? Yep, them too. Free energy inventors, anti-gravity researchers, the Tesla types who challenged the energy status quo. Many of them face constant patent roadblocks, unexplained funding shutdowns, even fires. We can't confirm it was all COINTELPRO, but it fits the profile. There's a pattern, and here's the chilling part. Whether it was indigenous sovereignty, ecological preservation, gender equality, artistic influence, or scientific disruption, the response was the same. Infiltrate, discredit, divide, erase. If you had a vision that threatened power, financially, politically, or energetically, you got a visit. Sometimes subtle, sometimes not. They didn't just fear violent revolution. They feared systemic evolution. Here's one thing that really kills me. The public still doesn't understand what made COINTELPRO so dangerous. It wasn't just the surveillance, it was the gaslighting. The way they turned trust into a weapon, warping perception, loyalty, and reality itself. They didn't just infiltrate movements, they rewired them from the inside. Let's pull the curtain back on their tactics. Forged letters, fake friendships, and friendly fire. They create a false paper trail, a letter from one activist trashing another. They'd send anonymous notes accusing someone of being an informant. They even used attractive operatives to seduce leaders, then leak compromising photos or recordings to destroy trust in the group. It wasn't about facts, it was about perception. Then we have leaked threats to stoke paranoia. They mailed fake death threats, not to their targets, but to their targets' families. FBI agents would then intervene to offer protection, positioning themselves as allies while tightening control. Other times, they'd leak plans that never existed just to watch a movement implode from the inside. Groups would cancel events, break alliances, and fracture, all without a single shot fired. Then, the all-too-familiar using media as a weapon. We know this one very well. And this one hurts because it still happens today. Back then, the FBI had designated liaisons inside newsrooms. That's confirmed by the Church Committee in 1976. Those liaisons pushed hit pieces, spun narratives, and planted rumors that looked like journalism. And this was back when there was alleged real news. Imagine today. If someone got too popular, they'd suddenly be labeled unstable, violent, or morally compromised. Not through court, through headlines. Then, when external factors failed, they'd turn loved ones into leverage. They didn't just go after the leaders, They went after their wives, brothers, and best friends. They'd slip edited audio, falsified reports, or heavily redacted documents into someone's hands just enough to make them doubt. Activists would suddenly find themselves isolated, abandoned by the people they trusted most. No direct confrontation, just silence. Now, you still have doubts? Fine, here are some receipts that don't lie. First up, the Church Committee hearings exposed dozens of these tactics in 1976. MKUltra crossover is real. Both programs shared personnel, goals, and psychological playbooks. Leaked COINTELPRO memos explicitly describe enhancing distrust and exploiting fractures. The goal wasn't to destroy from the outside. It was to make people destroy themselves from the inside out. Because if your enemy implodes without ever realizing what hit them, you win forever. When COINTELPRO first got greenlit, the excuse was simple. We have to stop Soviet infiltration. That was the headline. That was the fear trigger. That was the rallying cry to justify surveillance, infiltration, psychological warfare, all against American citizens. But here's the twist. The more you dig into the tactics, the more it looks like the US didn't just fight Soviet methods. It copied them. In fact, it perfected them. The KGB had a term, active measures. It meant planting fake stories, fueling paranoia, destroying trust in truth itself. And while the Soviets were whispering rumors into ears in Berlin and Belgrade, the FBI was faking death threats and leaking blackmail letters in Detroit and Oakland. The Cold War? It wasn't just about foreign enemies. It was a sandbox, a proving ground, a dress rehearsal for psychological control back at home. By the 1980s, we weren't looking for spies anymore. We were testing how fast the public could turn on itself. Fake news, controlled opposition, social movements riddled with informants before they even took off. And now, we call that Tuesday. So the next time someone waves a foreign flag to justify silencing dissent, ask yourself, whose playbook are they really using? COINTELPRO officially ended in 1971. But ending a program on paper isn't the same as killing the idea behind it. Because almost immediately, something else took its place, quietly, invisibly, and exponentially more powerful. Enter Echelon, Carnivore, and the internet itself. After COINTELPRO was exposed, you'd think they would have pulled back. Nope. Instead, they scaled up. The Echelon system, run by the Five Eyes Intelligence Alliance, started intercepting global communications in bulk. Carnivore, developed by the FBI, directly tapped into internet service providers to scan emails in real time. This wasn't about finding criminals. It was about building a profile on everyone. Post 9/11? Oh, they went fully operational. After 9/11, the gloves came off. The Patriot Act handed US intelligence agencies unprecedented powers, legalizing what COINTELPRO used to do in secret. Phone metadata, location tracking, social media monitoring, facial recognition, it's all part of the new toolbox. But the goals never changed. Discredit, isolate, disable. Only now, it's not just black leaders or anti-war protesters. It's journalists. It's whistleblowers. It's anyone asking too many questions. Modern day targets, same old playbook. Look at how Edward Snowden got treated. How Julian Assange was discredited. How every major whistleblower is either in exile, in prison, or smeared into oblivion. Watchdog journalists get flagged. Activists get shadow banned. Researchers find themselves suddenly debunked by think tanks you've never heard of, funded by the same people they're investigating. And now, you don't even know what's happening, because now you don't need to be infiltrated. Your devices do the job for them. Smartphones, smart TVs, voice assistants. Every keystroke and scroll becomes part of a behavioral profile. Welcome to predictive policing, where you don't have to commit a crime to be seen as a threat. And those fusion centers? They're data sharing hubs where local police, the FBI, and DHS coordinate in real time. These fusion centers weren't just coordination hubs. They were built to break down the walls between local and federal power. Cops, DHS agents, and FBI operatives now sit at the same desk, sharing live feeds, social profiles, and location data in real time. And guess what? There are over 80 of these across the U.S., all operating in legal gray zones. If you think your local police department is just your neighbor in uniform, you're already three steps behind. If COINTELPRO was a knife, this is a scalpel connected to a satellite. No explosions, no memos, just silence, shadow bans, and subtle nudges until the problem disappears. And you'll never know you were on the list. By now, we know COINTELPRO never died. It just traded its typewriter for algorithms and its field agents for influencers. And what we're looking at now is a software updated version designed for the digital age. This isn't just surveillance anymore. This is behavioral containment. Let's talk about Ferguson. When protests erupted in 2014 over the death of Michael Brown, documents later revealed that federal agencies were watching everything. Emails, text messages, even real-time drone footage. Multiple Ferguson leaders were put under surveillance, and several died under mysterious or unresolved circumstances in the years that followed. But most people never heard about that. Then came Standing Rock. Water protectors opposing the Dakota Access Pipeline found themselves stalked from the sky. Literally. Drones, infrared cameras, unmarked helicopters. Private security firms with ties to former intelligence operatives were embedded on site. And guess who they were working with? Local police, the FBI. And behind it all, a national fusion center tracking every move. Then, 2020 was the stress test. The George Floyd protests. Whether you supported them or not is irrelevant here. What matters is how the government responded. Facial recognition software was rolled out in real time. Stingray devices, those fake cell phone towers that can intercept your texts, were deployed across major cities. Encrypted messaging apps weren't safe. Cell signals were jammed, and drones hovered overhead while national fusion centers monitored all of it. Meanwhile, the social media space was flooded. Fake accounts, doctored videos, meme warfare, and algorithmic chaos, all designed to stir confusion, rage, and division. This wasn't about justice. This was about testing the limits of control. Who could be tracked, who could be silenced, and who could be manipulated into turning on each other? It didn't matter which side you were on, because to the system, you were just data. This is how you kill momentum without pulling a trigger. You don't need a sniper when you've got an algorithm that silences a post. You don't need an informant when a TikTok influencer can steer a narrative from the inside. You don't need a mole when you can flood a movement with bots screaming about psyops and clones until nobody takes it seriously. That's the playbook now. Outrage is manufactured. Factions are provoked. Whistleblowers are quietly discredited while safe truth tellers are handed platforms. In 2023, a DHS whistleblower revealed that influencer assessment reports were being run on public figures across TikTok and X. Not for violence, for influence potential. Their job? To map how far your ideas could spread and shut you down before they did. The more threatening your message, the smaller your reach. And if your ideas start catching on, they don't just bury you, they replace you with a louder, safer version of yourself. This is why some YouTube channels, like this one, don't get pushed very often or very much. Controlled opposition isn't a theory, it's policy. And if COINTELPRO 1.0 was a dagger in the back of activism, COINTELPRO 2.0 is a whisper in your ear that says, don't bother, they already own the outcome. Look, COINTELPRO was never just an American problem. It was a prototype. And once the software was stable, they exported it. What started as a domestic operation, psychological manipulation, surveillance, disinformation, infiltration, was quietly handed off to allies. Not as a warning, as a tool. Let's talk Operation Condor. From the 1970s through the 1980s, intelligence agencies across South America coordinated a brutal campaign of suppression and assassination. Argentina, Chile, Brazil, Uruguay, Paraguay, Bolivia. All of them worked together to disappear political dissidents, tens of thousands of them. And who trained many of those officers? The US, through the School of the Americas. We're not speculating either. Declassified CIA and State Department documents confirm direct U.S. support and training, funding, and advising these regimes. COINTELPRO's tactics, blackmail, media manipulation, psychological destabilization, were adapted and deployed in cities like Buenos Aires and Santiago. Except, only down there, they didn't stop at infiltration. They disappeared you in the night. Then came the Middle East. In the post-9/11 fog, U.S. intelligence began sharing psychological warfare tactics under the banner of anti-terrorism. That meant surveillance playbooks, narrative control, covert suppression of reformist voices. It wasn't about catching threats. It was about stopping momentum before it could start. Whistleblower reports from NGOs and journalists show that regimes from Egypt to Bahrain received training and tools that mirrored COINTELPRO's intent. Neutralize dissent through confusion, isolation, and digital strangulation. And let's not forget the Five Eyes Alliance. The US, UK, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. They've been running joint surveillance since the Echelon days. And, as Edward Snowden revealed, those systems didn't just catch terrorists. They built behavioral profiles on journalists, activists, and even elected officials. This wasn't the end of COINTELPRO. It was the franchise model. Everywhere these tactics landed, you got the same symptoms. Movements divided before they grew. Leaders discredited before they reached the mic. Narratives hijacked before they could catch fire. The tools got slicker. The targets got global. And the enemy? Still the same. Anyone who dared to challenge the system. All right, so let's slow down for 1 second. Because if you've made it this far, you're probably wondering, is any of this actually real? Well, yeah, it is. Not because we think so. The receipts are right there. These aren't conspiracies. They're federal records. Go to vault.fbi.gov. Look at the COINTELPRO documents yourself. Pages and pages of objectives, tactics, and targets in their own words. Then read the 1976 Church Committee hearings, where U.S. senators grilled intelligence officials under oath. The things they admitted to? If it were fiction, it would sound over the top. During the hearings, one moment stunned the room. Senator Walter Mondale asked a simple question. Did the FBI ever try to disrupt a political campaign? The answer? Yes, over 200 times. Former agents sat under oath and confessed to violating civil liberties with full authorization. One memo they exposed included the phrase, "neutralize the subject permanently." That wasn't metaphor, that was protocol. The National Archives still house memos, transcripts, and surveillance records, many reluctantly declassified, some still redacted. And on top of all that, we have eyewitness accounts, family testimonies, victims who lived through this, people who were harassed, surveilled, betrayed, and in some cases, never heard from again. So no, we're not speculating. We're not pushing a theory. We're following a paper trail, investigating, researching. And everything you just heard came from their documents, their voices, their playbooks, not ours. All we did was read it out loud. The most dangerous part of COINTELPRO isn't what they did, it's that it worked. They didn't just stop protests, they didn't just take out leaders, they rewired the operating system of public trust until silence looked like common sense and obedience felt like patriotism. This wasn't about surveillance, it was about psychological control on a population that still doesn't know it was targeted. Because if you can discredit someone before they speak, you don't have to assassinate them. You just delete the future they were trying to build. And that's the real legacy here. Not the files, not the footage, but the voices we never got to hear. The books that were never written. The ideas that were never shared. The revolutions that never made it past the parking lot. COINTELPRO did not end. It just changed platforms. The tools got quieter, more polite, more personalized. Now, it's an algorithm that knows which headline will make you roll your eyes before you even read it. It's a search engine that buries truth 3 pages deep. It's a culture that doesn't need to be censored because we've already been trained to self-edit. This was never about fighting crime. This was about owning narrative, turning every public figure, every grassroots spark, into a liability that would be neutralized before the idea could spread. And if you still think it's over, ask yourself why you've never heard of any of this before. Ask yourself why this program still isn't taught in schools. Why was it erased? While the playbook was upgraded. COINTELPRO didn't die, it just got rebranded. All right, guys, if this kind of truth-first investigation matters to you, not clickbait, not paranoia, just receipts that hit like a freight train, then help us keep going. This video isn't powered by sponsors or agendas, and you know that the algorithm isn't going to help this video get out much. So this channel, it's powered by people who care enough to question what they're told. So if that's you, help us by subscribing, share this video, and if you want to go even deeper and support what we're building here, check out our Patreon. It's over at patreon.com/divergentfiles. Even $3 a month helps keep this channel alive. And whether you believe all of this, some of this, or none of this, you stayed curious, you followed the trail, and that means more than you know. So thanks for showing up, and remember, you are truly appreciated. See you at the next one.